Meow.
Meow. Meow.
Meow, meow, meow,
meow. Meow. This is Freedom Fiends. Mr. Derek J. broadcasting from Podbay 2 Gay Professional Prisoner Studios. We blast only the highest quality happiness waves out into the atmosphere. This surrounds the globe with good vibrations and forces bad hamsters to surrender. This cools your stool to a tepid and tenacious 75 degrees and keeps a sin flood of straightism out of your brain. Is it working, Chandler? Can you feel it? Is it working? Can you feel it?
I can feel it.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. All right. So for the insomniacs, the swing shift workers, people in other countries, and those who just love having a syringe filled with liberty injected deep into their neck veins, we bring you tonight's Fiends, courtesy of BIPCOT no-gov license. You can check it out at BIPCOT.org. It means anyone can use this media for any purpose they want, except government folks. And we are connected tonight over Fiendphone, fiendphone.com.
Indeed.
Worms, Chandler. So I'm feeling safe. I'm good. I haven't been contacted by the government. How about you?
Yeah, I'm good. No government intervention here.
Well, that's a lie, actually. On my birthday, right after hosting the Freedom Fiends, like a couple hours later, I went to bed, I took a little nap, and woke right up and visited my friend Judge Burke here in Fiend, New Hampshire. And he's the main judge around here that, like, everyone sees if you're charged with any kind of crime, even a little petty parking violation, even little traffic. You know, there's no such thing as traffic court, like, here in New Hampshire. So even regular traffic infractions go to normal court. So that's where I went for my parking ticket.
Now, I gotta say, Does this judge get tired of seeing you in there? Because you pretty much fight every parking ticket you get, right?
Yeah, and I get every parking ticket I can. No, so, yeah, he must be sick of seeing me. But I'm sorry. He must be sick of seeing me, but yes, apparently not yet. He could drop the ticket anytime he wants, but he's chosen not to do that.
Well, I'm wondering if it's like the superhero and arch nemesis complex going on. You know, you're going in there fighting for justice, and he's just, you know, he feels like he's your arch enemy, so he just has to take a stand. You know, he'd be better off dropping the ticket. It's such a waste of resources and time, but he's got to prove you wrong, and he's got to defeat you. I'm kind of wondering if that's what it's like.
Yeah, well, so I am trying different strategies here. Like, I don't want to view Judge Burke as my nemesis or enemy, but we're playing chess here. We're, like, playing a little bit of a game, and apparently there are these rules that he must know very well, but I'm trying to, like, weasel my way around them, so I don't know if you're familiar, but there's a strategy that I've heard about of going in with an unsigned plea of guilty. And this is a strategy. I haven't really seen many videos of this working. I know Ian Freeman has done this before, and Keen, a few others around the country, but not many people can record their trials. So this is something I tried at this arraignment this week. I went in with a guilty plea, unsigned. So I'm saying, hey, I'm ready to plead guilty to this. I'm going in the spirit of resolution, right? Like, I'm not trying to fight this. I want to plead guilty. Let's get this over with. Sure. And I'm sure.
But you are going in the spirit of resolution, though, because you're not signing your name to it.
What do you mean?
Well, your signature is like a tacit agreement and or consent, and if you're not putting your signature on those forms, then it's you're really not doing anything, at least in their eyes.
Well, what I think I'm doing is putting in some evidence for when Judge Burke said, which he eventually did, that he's putting in a plea of not guilty on my behalf. I'm like, well, hey, you're acting as the prosecutor here, right? You're assuming jurisdiction on his behalf. And I have evidence right in front of you. It's in black and white, and it's going to be preserved in the record that I have tried to plead guilty. I wanted to say, like, do you need another copy? He kept saying, trying to say, like, I'm going to put in a plea of not guilty for you. It's like, no, this is, you can only put in a plea of not guilty under two circumstances, when I'm non-responsive or when you can't discern. And I'm not non-responsive. I'm trying to plead guilty. You can't discern. I've got it right in front of you. So it was weird that Judge Burke put in the plea of not guilty on my behalf, even though, you know, I was trying to plead guilty. What I was getting at was just, let's get this over with. All I'm asking is to be presented with the evidence. Actually, I didn't even ask to be presented with the evidence that the laws of New Hampshire apply to me. All I wanted to know is if the prosecutor has presented any to the judge. Like, hey, has he brought forward anything that proves that the laws and codes of the state of New Hampshire actually apply to me? You know, it's your opinion that the laws apply to me, but do you actually have any facts to prove that? And he, you know, he said it was an interesting argument, but now's not the time. Basically, it's a trial issue that we have to wait till this goes to trial. And I objected, saying, no, this is something we have to handle right now, because you're bringing me into your courtroom. You are assuming that you have the authority to do that. You're already assuming jurisdiction, which isn't that one of the elements of the crime? And I did ask him, you know, like, am I assumed to be innocent here? And he says, yes, of course, predictably. Judges are going to, you know, pat themselves on the back. Oh, yeah, he threw me a softball. Of course, you're presumed to be innocent. Well, isn't jurisdiction one of the elements of the crime? If I'm assumed innocent of all of the elements of the crime, then you're already assuming me guilty of one of them. By having me here,
well,
by holding me.
They can claim the jurisdiction just through the fact that you have a driver's license and a social security card and a birth certificate. All that stuff
you think?
Puts you under their jurisdiction. I know for a fact.
So is that what he's going to say?
Oh, he'll never say that.
Yeah, but maybe the prosecutor could use that argument. Is that what I should be expecting, you think? He'll say,
no.
Well, you signed the contract when you got a driver's license. You agreed to respect the laws of New Hampshire. I don't know. I don't know if that's even part of the requirement. I should get a copy of those rules, whatever's required to get a driver's license. I'm not exactly sure about it. But anyway, I did write a little blog post about it. I posted to freekeen.com, posted to my own website, thederekj.com, and I've got a little video up there. It's only 5 minutes long. I pulled another stunt, Chandler, that you can only pull once a year. I did ask for a motion to dismiss. I filed a motion to dismiss after my first strategy wasn't working, and handed this piece of paper to the judge saying, now here comes Derek J. Horton, the defendant. The defendant requests the court dismiss this trial on the grounds that it is the defendant's birthday. And he laughed, and he announced to the audience, who also laughed, I've given some leniency or exercise that sort of discretion on other people's birthdays, but that won't be the case today, you know?
Well, of course not.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, Judge Burke. And the prosecutor even joked, you know, will you make it a birthday present to me? Like, I don't want to put up with this kid anymore. You know, he already has taken me to court over this twice. And this is going to be his third time. He's going to go through the same arguments again. I wonder if he's going to even pull up anything new, or if he'll adapt to my new strategy here.
It astonishes me that they just don't drop it.
I know. Look at all the time and energy they're wasting. I would like to quantify it, too, because, you know, one of the things, I know it costs a lot of money to hire the prosecutor, file the paperwork, schedule the court date, pay off the judge, the, you know, the records people, and everything else that's involved with it. But on top of that, the meter people are often required to attend. So I'm pulling them off of the streets. The revenue that they would otherwise be generating, I don't know, could be in the hundreds of dollars. As they're walking around for several hours, they're prevented from writing those tickets when they're in court with me. And on top of that, they're probably often paid overtime.
they're standing on their twisted principles, though. They to dismiss this out of hand and just throw it out of court is giving you a victory, and where you tend to challenge all their, you know, all your parking tickets and their jurisdiction over you and stuff. They just can't allow that. Even though it's only $10, and even though that they're losing money, they're standing on their twisted principles, and they can't allow you to win. Because that would set a precedent, and people would see that if they went in there and contested everything, which I know is your goal, people would see that if they did that on a consistent basis, then they would the state would just get tired and throw it out. So well, they're also, not going to.
It would be a ridiculous precedent for them to agree to, because essentially, if I can make this argument successfully in this one courtroom, then it could be replicated elsewhere, and it essentially means that no judge anywhere has jurisdiction to charge any crime in their courtroom ever, because. You know, I'm saying, well, I mean, they would if they just had evidence that the laws apply. You know, if I signed somewhere saying, yes, I will agree to these rules, and they could present that, then I would have no argument, right? But all I'm saying is, right. Hey, I'm sure that piece of paper is somewhere, right? You wouldn't just build up your entire courthouse on an assumption that the rules apply to everybody. So,
of course,
surely, no, you wouldn't just assume that. This is a court, and we need evidence, right? The judge wouldn't accept an argument from me without evidence, and he should be no different. He's not held to a lower standard of evidence than the rest of us.
I'm really surprised he just doesn't bust out with, you know what? You park on our roads, and you stay too long, you get the ticket, you have to pay for it. I'm surprised he doesn't make that claim, you know, like, it's the state's roads, because that's what it boils down to. We're forced to use them. We have no choice in the matter, but the state owns all that. So
people think sorry, I cut you off. What'd you say?
Well, I was just to say, like I said earlier, if you get the permission slips from the state, you know, your license and all that stuff, they consider that a consent and an agreement.
Yeah, well, people think I'm some deadbeat for not paying these parking tickets. They're like, well, you're in court again. You know, you're wasting all those taxpayer money. Why don't you just put a dime in the meter? It's not like I don't do that. This time when I got the parking ticket, I was in court fighting parking tickets.
Of course you were.
So how am I supposed to pay my meter then?
You have to hire somebody.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
The Michigan Peace and Liberty Coalition is proud to present the 3rd Annual Midwest Peace and Liberty Fest. It will be held at the Circle Pine Center in Delton, Michigan from August 7th through the 10th. There will be vending, discussions, presentations, all sorts of activities for children and adults, and bacon, lots of bacon. Round up your friends and family and get them registered today at miplc.org. That's miplc.org. Dogs welcome. Longer leashes recommended.
Freedom beans.
Of course, the freaking beans.
And Chandler, I don't know why they haven't dropped these tickets. I don't know what's going to happen at court. It's not a trial issue. You know, if I were suing the judge and tried to bring him into my courtroom, said, you have to be here or else, he would object and he wouldn't wait for trial to do that. So, you know, it's frivolous for him to say, oh, I'm going to accept the prosecutor. I'm going to assume that we have jurisdiction over you because it would be really bad if I didn't.
Isn't it sad that the state has a monopoly on what we call a system of justice? I wouldn't call it justice, but what is laughably called a system of justice? The state has a monopoly on that. You are just expected to appear, and if you don't, you know,
bad things.
I had an interesting. Well, not interesting. It's kind of lame, actually. I went down to Boston back in February to see Marilyn Manson in concert, and
cool.
I got a a letter from the city. No, it was the state of Massachusetts. Apparently, I had gone through one of their tolls.
Uh-oh.
I wasn't even aware of that.
You accidentally went through a toll? Are you sure it was you?
They're sure it's me. They say they've got it, like, you know, on their little camera or whatever. And I mean, I hate driving in the city. You know, it's like my least favorite thing to do. So maybe I did. Maybe I didn't see where I was going and I went over this toll. I can tell you,
you know,
if there would have been, that's besides the point. But they're, you know.
Sorry, you cut out for a second. What happened when you were in Boston? What did you just say?
Oh, well, I went through, I guess it was on the Tobin Bridge or something. I don't know. Some toll that wasn't displayed. Like, there was no signs, no toll booths, nothing. So I get this bill for $3 in the mail. And, you know, of course I ignored
it. That's the welcome to Massachusetts bill, didn't you know?
Yeah.
Everyone knows about that.
I didn't. And I called them up and...
What's it going to be, like $100? They always charge, we assessed an extra fine of $50, and then we have to pay off the union.
Yeah, they did. I could have sworn that I paid it, because I'm pretty sure I got on their stupid website and, you know, gave them their collection fee.
Here's your money on your stupid website.
But, yeah, I just got another notice, you know, and says I owe him like $53, and if I don't pay it there,
you
I
owe
can't
us more.
Renew my license.
I think that's what they should do. They should have some of their programmers on the like add into their website. As soon as someone pays, like they're like, "All right, we got a sucker, and we've already got his credit card info. Let's ask for some more." Like, oh, we didn't assess the extra $100 processing fee. Now you need to send us more money. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. It's lame.
I think I'm going to start sending people bills for tolls they don't know about. Like, oh, you came through the Derek toll, and here, just send me all your credit card information. I'm going to run it for $53. And people,
well,
you know,
I don't know. I'm kind of opposed to tolls to begin with, but I suppose I can understand the logic behind them.
Yeah, isn't like that how we're going to, like, a free society? Wouldn't there be, like,
well,
tolls?
Yeah.
But they'd be, like, digital tolls, not the ones that you have to stop at and hand, like... coins, some stupid medals to another person. It's like, well, we're Neanderthals. Here's some medals I collected.
They have
Dear Leader's face on them.
The thing that really bothers me, I've talked to Minarchus about it, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, the roads! Okay, fine, whatever.
Worms.
But when they put all those tolls up in the 50s, it was to pay for, you know, the interstate system.
Right, and then those things are going away, aren't they?
Right. Right, they're going away in about 20 years, right? So here we are almost 70 years later, and the tolls have not only not gone away, they've actually increased.
Everything the government says is a lie, and everything the government has, it has stolen.
But my main objection with this one is, again, there were no signs. I didn't even know I crossed a toll. I mean, I guess at that given moment where traffic was crazy and I hate driving in the city, if it was easier to go through a toll, I probably would have just coughed up the money and thrown them some coins or whatever and done it. But I didn't know. I didn't even have a choice. So it just irritates me. But, you know, if I don't pay it, they're going to revoke my permission slip to drive on their roads, and then that'll give the cops just another excuse to pull me over. So you really can't win when you play in their system.
I don't know. You kind of can. And, like, I'm winning. I'm keeping those parking enforcers off the street. And what have I got to lose? A little bit of my time, you know, but I'm on vacation anyway, and... $5.
Well, I told you what I'm gonna do with the parking. I got a failure to stop at a stop sign. What I'm gonna do to pay that $100 fine?
What?
I'm gonna show up at the window and pay it in $100 and pennies.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's Antiwar.com.
pennies. What do you think is going to happen to you, Chandler? Do you think they're just going to say, okay, sure?
Well, here's the thing, okay? I was talking to a friend of mine about it, and I'm really torn because that's really the only form of protest I can lodge against this stupid ticket at this point.
You can't refuse to pay?
Well, I could refuse to pay, and then I'd have my license pulled. And
so let me get this straight. You took this issue to court. What was the initial charge?
Failure to stop at a stop sign.
Failure. You failed.
We've talked about
to stop.
This.
I know, we have. So they're alleging you failed to follow the rules. They found you guilty. You tried to defend yourself. And
yeah, which was a total sham.
Now there's a fine, and you didn't have to pay the fine right away?
No. Well, they said... they were like, all right, 30 days. I was like, nope, ain't going to happen. And the prosecutor was like, 60 days. I was like, nope.
How much is the fine?
$100?
Yeah, and you're like, I just can't scrape it.
It was 120. And
you should tell them you live under a bridge and you're like indigent and you have no money. Like, it takes me a year to make $100.
I said, yeah, I'm poor. And she's like, all right, well, I can extend it for the maximum, 120 days. And I was like, all right, whatever.
And the maximum?
Yeah.
Doesn't she know she's the judge? She can make up whatever she wants?
Well, no, this was the prosecutor.
Oh.
And even the judge. No, they can only go up to 120 days, and then it has to be paid.
Yeah, and then there's some magic fairy who you know... punishes right. them if they allow right. you to have more time. Yeah, okay.
So, you know, I want to do that, pay it in pennies, you know, and I'll go to the bank and just get $100 worth of roll pennies and throw it in a box and be like, here you go. But then there's a side of me, like, you have to make physical payments because they want everything done online. And there's this tiny little office about 30 miles away from me, which is the, you know, the violations Jeez, bureau.
That's pretty far. Whatever. Is that even in the yeah. same county as you? I mean,
I think it's actually in the next county. Come to think of it,
how could they do that? Seems.
Oh no! It's still in the same county. But
okay,
it's like right on the but
same
yeah,
tax farm.
I don't know.
So
it's
you're
weird.
You're there, and you're going to go in person because it takes up more of their time and energy. And because you can do it in pennies, you can't do that online.
Yeah, you should can't ask do that online.
If you can pay in Bitcoin.
If I had any to do that, it'd be kind of
see
cool.
what they just see what they say. Hey, you want me to pay this online? I don't see your Bitcoin option. I was on your site, didn't see it.
That would be kind of funny. So I'm torn though because you know I'm going to go to this office and there's going to be this one person working in this little room collecting these extortion fees.
Janice.
Yeah.
I don't know. Sounds like
I kind of don't want to be a tool and walk up and be like, here you go, here's $100 in pennies to pay my fine, because
why is that a person, tool thing to do?
Well, you know, I mean, that person didn't do anything to me personally.
So temper your activism. It's something I saw Ian do once upon a time. Ian Freeman of Free Talk Live paid a tax bill in some weird way. I think it was ones or something. And he bought pizza for the employees and the people who had to wait because of this act. You know, because of this action, it is a little inconvenient, right?
The whole situation is inconvenient because if I choose this form of protest, right?
Yeah, you're only punishing yourself.
Right, I have to take time out of my day. I have to drive, which is gas money, and you know I have to go to the bank and get the pennies. And
so make a video out of it. I mean, if you're gonna do it at all, if you're even thinking about like, hey, this would be a cool, funny idea or whatever. I mean, at least make a video out of it and use it to promote your site or your podcast or whatever. I mean, or the fiends,
right.
whatever. I mean, doing that sort of activism, I agree with you. It's just punishing the wrong people. It's punishing you and some of the bureaucrats who work in the office doing collections. It doesn't affect the judge or the prosecutor. They don't even... Are they even going to hear about it?
No, they won't even hear about it. And they still get their money. So that's why I'm kind of torn on it, you know?
Yeah.
And I got to be honest, like, if my situation was a little bit different, like if I didn't have the job I had and, you know, my kid was growing up and out of the house, I probably wouldn't bother paying it. And, you know, if they took my license so well, I'd still drive.
Yeah.
But given the circumstances I'm in, that's really not an option right now.
All right.
So I'm not to the point where I can just do that.
You should come join us down in Fiend, New Hampshire. We're having all kinds of fun here and give Judge Burke extra heck. Because I think it's more effective when, I mean, can you imagine Judge Burke, if people try these strategies and take their tickets to court and everything, and mostly petty things, hopefully, wherever they are, if you're listening around the country or the globe, I mean, yeah, this judge is going to see, like, you and have a hard time and maybe scratch his head, and you'll be like 1 in 100 or 1 in 1,000 people who actually puts up any kind of resistance to what they're trying to do. But if you were in a small town where there's a group of people who take on these things, it would really wear on the judge and the court system, I would think, you know? So
it's more of an annoyance, though. It's like insects swarming around your head, you know, because they can't make an exception. They can't change the status quo. Even if they wanted to and they believed it was the right thing to do, like even if you miraculously got a good person in office, which I know is kind of a conundrum, but they can't change that system, because if they try, they'll just, you know, they'll be accused of not doing their job and they'll get booted out.
That's fine.
You know, well, that's fine. And then you've got another person that comes in, and then maybe the next person isn't, you know, doesn't find it. I'm sure Judge Burke finds you amusing, to say the least, right?
He laughs.
You guys go, you've got this weird kind of relationship. You know, you go in there for every little violation and you protest it on principle.
It is weird, but I think he respects that.
Yeah, he's probably like, oh, isn't that cute? Derek's back, you know? But so if he has an attack of conscience, right, and starts to just dismiss these out of hand, and it starts to eat away at that system a little, who's to say that's not going to come back on him? He's going to be replaced, then you're going to have somebody in there who's just horrible, who can, instead of, you know, laughing and joking with you, can impose the maximum fine, or any, if that's $10, fine. But maybe they'll say to the police chief, you know, this Derek guy, he's a rabble rouser. I don't like him. He keeps showing up in my court.
But it's not just me. And, like, I'm not the only activist in Fiend, you know. There's
well, I know.
The Robinhooders, like, just won their victory in the state Supreme Court today.
I know, that's great.
So, I mean, that's a huge embarrassment for the city of Keene. And I'm not a Robin Hooder.
Not win.
Well, it was
bound to happen. We should probably review what that is. What are the Robin Hooders doing in Keene?
Robin Hooders are people who feed expired parking meters for motorists in downtown Keene, New Hampshire. And in this way, they prevent people from getting parking tickets and thus feeding the state. So, you know, these people aren't having to pay fines. Instead of paying $10, the city's only really getting 10 cents. So it's a big difference. And in
they're
this way,
they're still getting money, but it's less.
Yeah, but so, the city, you know, has lost, like, something. I forget what the estimates were. One of the accountants here in Keene
did they say it was like $1 million?
No, I think it was. I think last year it was something between, if you're going to do a conservative estimate, I think it was around $60,000. I mean, which is a sizable chunk of change. You know, I could imagine that's
crazy. Meters,
right? That could pay for both the parking enforcers' salaries, right? So pretty much, what are they only paying for themselves? They're not collecting very much money. Anyway, I want to talk about toxic water balloons. Can we change gears for a minute?
So that's one of quite a shift.
I know, but one of the other, it's not really a reach, because we're talking about the activists here in Keene and some of the weird things that they do to try and change the system, you know? Because, like, I don't...
So are you throwing toxic water balloons at the courthouse?
No. Hell, heck no. But I live in the Keene Activism Center, or a building that is, you know, kind of known to be where the activists hang out. And because of this, the building is often the target of attacks by random people or people who just don't like what some of the activists are doing. And they collectivize and think like, well, because Ian did something or because Derek did something, you know, I'm going to go punish everybody. And one of the neighbors here who's gotten...
As a side note, though, isn't it so scary how the state has infected people to enforce their social laws for them?
Yeah, like, it's called slave-on-slave violence.
You guys are taking a stand, and the slaves that should be rallying with you are actually, you know, fighting against you.
Yeah, that is bizarre, but it's also predictable. So one of the neighbors here of the Keene Activism Center is, we call him Boston Strong. He is one of the best activists that the Stop Free Keene group has. He'll be out there vigilantly rubbing away any chalk drawings that people will make in the downtown area with buckets of water. And anyway, this guy, he's a plumber. And recently, during an episode of Free Talk Live, he came by the studio and stopped his car in the middle of the street and got out a big bucket of water from his trunk and dumped it right on the in front of the property. And it really stunk. So we're like, was that just water? This guy's a plumber, right? So presumably he would have access to toxic waste. And, you know, I'm not alleging that's what it was, but it does make me curious because most recently we were hit again, something like water balloons that had like a stink bomb type material or something. So
somebody probably just cleaned out their drains, all the gross water and nasty. I just did that, actually. I replaced some pipes in my house, and yeah.
They Isn't that weird?
Some nasty,
I mean, yeah, I'm thankful. I've heard of activists in like the 60s having burning crosses put on their lawns and lynchings, people having replicas of people hanging up in their front lawns and their trees and stuff. Thank goodness we're not encountering anything remotely close to that. It's just like water balloons and people throwing water at us.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now. My fellow sheep, election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains. Because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CATMUF, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CATMUF, because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
Beans. Hey! Chandler, did you get your kid a car yet?
Nope, not yet. It's tough shopping.
What are you waiting for?
Well, I suppose she needs to go through driver's ed and get her permit and her license.
Oh, she doesn't have that stuff yet?
No, we're kind of slow on that.
Yeah,
not in a big hurry.
You should
you should draw up
your own license. You should draw up your own permit. Like, she has spent 1,000 hours behind the wheel, 10,000 hours behind the wheel with Chandler St. Pierre, and she is now an expert driver. This
yeah,
is your license.
Scare anyone?
Huh?
That's enough to scare anyone.
Yeah.
10,000 hours behind the wheel with me. I don't know. I've been told I'm kind of an aggressive driver.
Uh-oh. What does that mean? I mean, you change lanes in front of people, you don't signal, you cut people off and speed, you ride people's tail. Well, is that what you...
No, I don't do that because it drives me nuts when people do that.
Yeah.
That's me, but
So I want to make clear...
I suppose I may have a... Whatever.
Hold on, pause for a moment, Chandler, because I want to make clear to our listeners, though we are connected over the greatest program to use for long-distance communication and high-quality audio, FiendPhone, which you can get free at FiendPhone.com, our audio problems are unrelated to FiendPhone. It's just our internet connection. It's the NSA with their worms in our tubes.
Yep, clogging everything.
It's the NSA worms. So, yeah, I ask you if you got your kid a car yet, because you were asking me. I'm selling my car, and you're like, oh, hey, you were going to buy my car from me. But I was like, don't do it. It needs work, man. And I wanted to talk about this on The Fiends, because I want to hear people's suggestions for, like, what would be the solution for this problem in Ancapistan, like, in the anarchist libertarian paradise of the future.
What's the problem?
The problem is, I bought a car on Craigslist from a teenager, and maybe I didn't do my due diligence, buyer beware and all that. I know I'm responsible for this, but I bought a car from a teenager and it turned out to be a lemon. I can't get it registered, I can't get it inspected, and therefore, you know, can't be registered for very long. And, I'm stuck. I've got this hunk of metal. It rides great. I'm very comfortable with it. It's got some suspension problems, so it's a little bit of a bouncy ride, but this apparently is enough to fail it for inspection in New Hampshire. And I don't know what to do, man. I can't sell it. No one's going to buy it, because to get the necessary work done, it costs like between $1,000 and $5,000 or something, and the car's only worth maybe $3,000, so why put in all that money for something that you're going to have less value out of, you know?
Well, I have kind of mixed signal feelings on that. Like, if I had the money, I would buy it and fix it up for one simple reason. What year is that car?
99.
Yeah, that's the reason. Have you looked at new cars lately?
Yeah.
They're like all computers and push buttons and no keys, and, you know, they can be hacked, and I'm so all set. Like, I will never own a new car.
You mean like I hacked by the government?
It can be hacked by anyone.
I'm going to put on my tinfoil hat.
Yeah, you can do that, but you remember Ben Stone did a podcast talking about
appeal to authority, logical fallacy. It doesn't matter what Ben Stone says.
It was a prominent internet activist who got into a rather suspicious car accident, and, you know, a lot of experts talked about how...
I think I remember that. It was like someone's who... weren't they making a movie or something, and then like an anti-government movie, and then their Mercedes sort of like drove off of the road out of their control, the engine block ended up like, I don't know, 1,000 feet away
or something.
Yeah, it was crazy.
It was crazy.
And then there was some, there was like someone cleaning up the mess before the police even arrived. It was really, really weird.
Yeah, a lot of suspicious circumstances.
It could be, man.
But people came out and said that, you know, the new cars with all the computer components, they're very vulnerable.
Yeah, well...
And it's just more to fail and go wrong.
Maybe
even if
you're
you don't go down the conspiracy route.
Maybe you're just crazy, because when we come back, we've got an article to share with you. 5 ways powerful people trick you into hating protesters, like me and Chandler. We're going to unbrainwash you from their powerful methods. Here on Freedom Fiends, worms.
Meow.
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 Are you sick of peaceful people being locked away for victimless crimes? Instead of trying to get out of jury duty, consider taking it so you can do the right thing. A single juror with a conscience can send someone home to their family instead of to a jail cell. If there's no victim, how can there be a crime? And if the judge or prosecutor are keeping you in the dark, what are they trying to hide? You can vote your conscience instead of being a pawn of the state. For more information, Google jury nullification or check out the Fully Informed Jury Association at fija.org.
This is the Freedom Fiends broadcasting through the Libertarian Re-Education Center's Low Orbit Ion Cannon, Hyatt Financial Beast Plaza, on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. And the Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT, no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except who, Derek?
Governments!
Governments. They can't reuse us. They just use us. So you can learn more at BIPCOT.org. Worms.
Worms.
Yeah, my podcasts are also covered by the BIPCOT no gov license, and I recommend it to everyone whenever I see that, like, especially in the Bitcoin space, a lot of people have this debate over, should the software be open, you know, should I allow other people to modify it, you know, intellectual property and whatnot, and I'm like, you know, hey, if you've got an issue with people modifying or using your software for evil, should check out the BIPCOT no gov license, because governments are insanely evil. They're the ones who are most likely to use your products to do harm or to enforce harm against others for copying your art or adding more to the world. Anyway, that's BIPCOT no gov, BIPCOT.org. I wanted to talk about another LibPair solution going to the 21st century of car buying. We use Craigslist for this stuff now, and I found a car. I was in love with it. I bought it. I knew it had a couple things wrong with it, so I got it on the cheap because I was like, "Oh, great! I'll fix it up and then get it running."
Now,
and
does Craigslist have the rating system like eBay?
No, no.
Okay, so that's its flaw.
Anybody can post anything. Well, that's its flaw and its strength, right? Because anybody can post anything. It's sort of more. It's more open. Like, there are black market activities that happen on Craigslist sometimes. That wouldn't be possible on an eBay.
Okay.
So
you could still have reputation-based systems with black market activities, couldn't you?
Sure, yeah. But none of which I know exist at this time, or, you know, they're not being used to sell cars. So anyway, I bought this car, I drove it home, I drove it all the way to New Jersey and back. This thing works, okay? But the state won't give me permission to put it on their roads that I pay for because, I don't know, standards or something. They've got...
Well, that's a whole nother issue.
It's some kind of racket of like, okay, now you have to... I really don't understand it because the state doesn't really get
inspection
money.
Inspection stickers... Yeah, well, they do and they don't. I mean, it's kind of third party the way they get money, but...
Well, I think they get paid every time I get inspected, right? So when I do a state inspection, they're getting a cut of that. And every time they fail me, they're like, thanks for the money. We're going to keep failing
you. Well, no, because the garage gets the, well, in Maine, it's I think it's like $12. The garage gets the $12, but to be a state inspection place, you have to have a license for it. So they get their money there, you know, licensing mechanics and independent garages. But
yeah,
I won't say who, but I have a mechanic who, unless your car is blatantly unsafe,
yeah,
he will inspect it and tell you everything about it, but he'll give you a sticker. I mean, so much to the point where I don't know if I ever told you this story, but I had a van that I bought, and it was a total lemon. I bought it from a local dealership here, and the reverse gear went within the first year. I had this van for 4 years, and I drove it around with no reverse. Talk about a challenge.
I mean, yeah, but and, it can be done.
He inspected that.
That's what I'm saying, though. That. Right? People...
So I think their standards, where I was going with this, though, is I think their standards for what's safe and what's not are very arbitrary and sometimes ridiculous.
Yeah,
right?
Like my suspension? Like, I mean... old cars didn't even have suspension, right? So, what are we concerned about? As long as the wheels aren't falling off, I feel like everything should be fine. Oh, you have too bumpy of a ride in your luxury car. Okay, who cares? Let me drive this thing. You know, but now right. I can't even sell it. That's my issue, is that I want to sell it now because I can't use it. The state won't let me. And now how do I do that morally, Chandler? Because I have to let them know. I have to be like,
hey. You are being moral about letting people know. I mean, you told me right off the bat when I asked you.
Yeah.
It needs work, and unless you can do the work yourself, you're going to pay a lot of money to get it fixed.
Right, and that's it. That's right in the Craigslist post that I put it out there, and, you know, I said, like, hey, these lights are on.
So you're being moral about it.
I know, but it's a pain. So here's what I did. I wrote to the kid that I bought it from, and this kid's like 18 or something, you know. I think it was his first car. It was a hand-me-down from his mom and his family and everything, and he never got it worked on. It hadn't been inspected in over a year or something. So he, you know, a teenager, how he uses and abuses his first car. He did something to it and wrecked it. And now I wrote to him in an email, like, hey, I just put this on Craigslist. I've been trying for months to get it on the road. Will you please do the right thing and buy this back from me? I've put over $1,000 into trying to get it working, right? Paid, I think, $2,000. Yeah, I mean, I know. I paid $2,000 up front, put over $1,000 into trying to fix it up, and now I can't sell it for anything. I mean, what are the consequences? Like, what am I supposed to do here? Am I just like, hey, you just learned a very expensive lesson, Derek? Or is there something that would happen in LibPair where I could be like, hey, man, you sold me something that was supposed to run? You know, I don't know. How do I get justice here?
No, I think you really did learn a very expensive lesson,
that's
honestly.
That's it. There's just...
And that's how it would work in LibPair. And, you know, how long have you had this car for sale? A couple weeks?
Less than a week.
Okay, so chill, man.
I can't chill.
I mean, I know it's a tough predicament to be put in because you need to get another vehicle.
No, I already got one.
Okay, well, there you go. So you'll find somebody who, I mean, that it's a sharp car. Like I said, if I had the money and I had the means to fix that up, I would totally
get it. It's a 99 Infiniti Q45. Will, right? No, I just got a Mercedes. This was an Infiniti. That's the one that's for sale.
Okay.
So yeah, I mean, I'll drive it. If anyone out there listening,
but you might find somebody who wants it for parts, or you might find somebody who would be worth fixing up. So,
all right.
You know, just give it some time.
All right. So have some patience. Don't try and hold this kid. You know, don't try and. I mean, that kid, he's never going to respond to that email, right? I'm fooling myself.
No, he's not. And I mean, like, honestly,
hey man.
Honestly, Derek, what did you expect buying a car from an 18-year-old kid? I mean,
I should have known better,
say that,
right?
There aren't some good 18-year-old kids out there, but most of them are inexperienced.
It's because his dad was there. His dad added credibility just by being there, you know, because it's like, I'm not going to let my son... I think he was trying to protect his son, making sure that he didn't get weaseled out of a deal. Or something,
right.
But it ended up being the opposite, where it's like, oh, this dad just added credibility to a car that had none. So,
right.
Whoops.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, expensive lesson learned, brother.
All right. Well, thanks. Thanks a lot, Chandler. I was hoping I was going to get like some secret tip, like, oh, here's what you do. Or I don't know, like LibPair. With what we've got right now are these lemon laws, and... The way it works, as I understand it, is this is like some sort of federal, quote unquote, protection, where if you buy a car and then it costs more than twice what you paid to get it working and on the road, then you can be you can force the person you bought it from to reimburse you. You could, you know, force
the. I disagree with that.
The reverse
sale. I disagree with that totally.
Why? Because it's antithetical to buyer beware?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
if you know
the law as it stands,
if you say, okay, like, I guess if the kid said, hey, this car runs fine and it works great, and then you bought it and then it wouldn't start, and you couldn't even dry it off. I could see that, but
right,
you would different. Try it out before you would try it out before you did that anyway.
Right. So, no, I took a test drive. I even brought a little car expert with me, my mechanic, the guy who does all my work. Exactly. I brought him with me. He checked it out. He was like, yeah, there's a couple things wrong with it. I asked the kid to get it inspected by a mechanic because like I was going to do that. When I buy a car, I bring it to the mechanic myself. But I asked this kid, hey, you know, bring it to a mechanic. Let me know anything that's wrong with it or if any lights are on or anything. So he did. Right. He said that he brought it to a mechanic, and he told me that, you know, he told me the problem was right front sway bar links were missing. I'm like, that's a $30 fix. No big deal. I can do that. And that is something that would fail inspection. So it made sense that he didn't have the inspection sticker and that the suspension was a little wonky. But that's all I thought was wrong with it, is a $30 fix, not a $5,000 fix. I mean, that is lying, right. Isn't it?
It is. It is.
That's being dishonest. That's blatantly dishonest. That's fraud. So it's not like it's a buyer beware moment. I mean, I was defrauded, right?
Yeah, you were.
And now I'm trying to turn around and be the good guy and sell this on Craigslist again with all, you know, full disclosure. But I'm going to get screwed. I've got nothing. It's like, oh, hey, here's this great fixer-up if you know what you're doing. It could actually be worth it for somebody if they have the skills. That's the thing. Maybe I should just learn the skills. Maybe I should be mechanic to the fiends. Mechanic.
That would be cool.
Mechanic to the anarchists. I mean, there needs to be someone out there, I don't know, who will look the other way for these government inspections and just give the stickers out.
I mean, yeah, there are people. I don't know how reputable it is, but I know. Like I've been told by friends, hey, you need a sticker, you know.
That's kind of scary. Like we've got to get rid of this government control over transportation because they do such a poor job at it. Like I do want standards on the road.
To go that route,
yeah, but yeah. I do want standards of safety on the road. I want to have this peace of mind that the other cars I'm encountering aren't going to fall apart right in front of me. You know, so
that's why I tend not to.
But the state being in charge of that ends up with the situation you're describing, where some people can get stickers for lemons and other people like me have working cars and can't get a sticker at all.
Right.
Anyway, I shouldn't be so mad about it.
Some reform.
Worms.
Well, it's a frustrating thing.
Hey, when we come back, I definitely want to talk about these tricks that powerful people use.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
Hey, this is Squisklar Squiggles from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the road to freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Bipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends worms button.
And ask me about my worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
In the late night radio or the early morning radio, depending on where you are. So we're going to talk about a really interesting article I came across on cracked.com. Now I gotta say, first off,
Speak into your mic.
When I was growing.
Sounds like you're all over the place. Get in there.
I'm all over the place.
Come on.
When I was growing up, Cracked Magazine was like the cheap knockoff to Mad Magazine, right?
Yeah.
But over the last few years, I've really started enjoying the articles on Cracked.com. I actually found them. Have you ever seen the movie John Dies at the End?
No. I've never heard of it.
You need to check it out. It's David Wong, who's a writer for Cracked.com.
Oh, okay.
It's one of his movies.
Yeah.
It's got Paul Giamatti in it, and it's excellent. It's
wow.
A very, very trippy, strange, weird movie. It's
Man, excellent. How do some people get to be so cool that they're like movie directors with movies with Paul Giamatti, and then they write for Cracked.com? It's like, you got a cool life, David Wong.
Got to work for it, but
yeah,
he's written a lot of good stuff, and so I subscribe to them on Twitter and Facebook, and you know I have them bookmarked on my computer, so I check them every so often. And the stuff that comes out on this website, some of it's really just entertaining, and some of it is really insightful for Cracked. You know, you wouldn't think so. So anyway, I came across an article today. 5 ways powerful people trick you into hating protesters. I'm just going to read the intro to this article and then we'll go through them. So it starts off, let's say tomorrow that you are elected secret ruler of the USA, a position that gives you total power over the government, economy, and the culture at large. Everything that the hippies refer to as the system. Now your first job is to not get beheaded by rioting peasants, which means your first job is really to maintain stability, i.e. keeping things mostly the way they are, you know, like maintaining the status quo.
Have you ever heard of the book Handbook for Tyranny, or like How to Be a Successful Tyrant?
I've heard of it. I haven't read it.
It's a book by Larkin Rose. And it's called like the Megalomaniac Manifesto. This is sort of what it's reminding me of, this article.
Yeah. So, immediately you'll find that you're facing a never-ending stream of protesters from disgruntled groups who say they're being treated unfairly or otherwise getting left out. This group over here is upset that somebody got abused by the police. This other bunch over here is demanding better wages or something. How do you handle it? Sure, you could crush their movements with an iron fist, using violence to kill, intimidate, or arrest their most vocal members. But that can backfire.
No, but that's what they do anyway.
Well, sometimes, yeah. Often turning them into martyrs and proving them right in the process.
Yeah, wasn't that the same thing that happened to Occupy Wall Street?
Kind of, yeah.
I mean, that's exactly what happened. They were like, I don't like this unrest, these people who are protesting with signs, so why don't we send in a bunch of goons in SWAT gear and tactical masks and armor and smoke bombs and pepper spray and make peace happen.
And crush them.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, so you risk the martyr thing and proving them right. I mean, you've seen Star Wars, right? Somebody always finds the exhaust port. Nope. What you need to do is get the majority on your side against those vocal complainers. Fortunately for you, the system comes with a number of refined and subtle processes designed to make sure the complaints of the few get ignored by the many. First on the list we have, wait for one of them to break the law and then talk only about that. And this is a common, common one. Like, if you're foolish enough to watch the corporate media, like Fox News or something, that was a classic example with Occupy Wall Street. You would have somebody that would, you know, go in and break the law, you know, consume illegal substances in front of everyone, or, you know, do something stupid like damage property. And the media would solely focus on that, you know. They would just totally shape the argument away from whatever the group was protesting and be like, you see what these people do? You know, they commit crimes. They're criminals. They break the law. They destroy property. And that's, you know, it works so well to turn the uninterested majority against them, you know?
Yeah. Hey, those people have an opinion. They must be weird. They feel strongly about something. They must be wrong.
An opinion different than mine.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Worms. All right, Chandler. So I just watched your awesome music video that you shared with me over the break. I think everyone should check it out. Last week when we were chilling together, we talked about Saul Williams and how awesome slam poetry can be, and how art can influence creative minds to break out of the box of slavery that the state puts us in. And so anyway, this video does a great job, and it was linked at vice.com. So Saul Williams, intense new music
video. And the video is called Burundi.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's awesome. Check Worms. It out. So we were talking before the break about, you know, waiting for one of the protesters to break the law and only talk about that. So that'll happen. And a lot of times what we found in the past few years is protesters are getting really smart and they're policing their own and they're not breaking laws and they're not using violence.
Well, wait a minute. It's okay to break some laws.
Right, right. But
some laws are bad laws.
Right. And breaking some of those laws brings attention to how bad they are. But yeah, a lot of times...
Like hiding Jews on your premises during the Holocaust would be breaking a bad law.
Right. But I think what they're talking about in this article is like, you know, people that throw rocks at windows and property damage and foolish things like that. You know, when you have a huge demonstration, when it turns violent or aggressive.
That's why I don't want to be a part of a big demonstration like that. It's like,
I agree.
If I'm not a collectivist and I don't want to be grouped in with some collective, then why would I join in with some marching group of people when if one person throws a rock at a window, the whole group of people is going to be held responsible for that, or at least, you know, even if don't in the court of law, it'll be in the court of public opinion, so...
And that's where you win or lose. And we've seen that these groups increasingly are policing their own, which is good. But when that happens, oftentimes what you'll see is local thug enforcements or the feds will just send in people dressed as, you know, hippies or those terrible anarcho-communists in all black and red, and they will cause the damage, the property damage, or they will start the violence. Okay. So they send in their agent provocateurs, and then they focus on that to discredit the movement. So then the next thing we have is convince the powerful majority that they're the oppressed ones. So you turn the these people that are protesting for, let's say, they're not getting high enough wages or some foolishness like that. Then you talk to the majority and say, oh, no, they don't get it. You're the ones who are being oppressed. If we follow their example, then you'll make less money or whatever. And they cite in this article, last year, a billionaire investor said that criticism of the rich today is equivalent to the persecution of the Jews during the Holocaust. No, the guy's not having a stroke. He's under the influence of one of the most powerful techniques the system has in its arsenal. And that's to get the majority to ignore complaints by a disadvantaged group. So you find an example of a successful member of a disadvantaged group, and you exaggerate their power, which is I could see where that would work really well. See, the biggest thing that the state does, the system, you know, whatever you want to call it, is they always make an issue us versus them. Right, no matter what it is, wages, abortion.
That's not just the state, though. That's like, I hesitate to use the term human nature, but don't we love competition? We always want to see, you know, sports games or like us versus them is life. That's what's fun.
Right, but when you're talking about social issues and you want to, I won't say fix, but you want to at least address them and get people to question whether it's moral, whether it's even working.
Well, I guess like so.
That's the tactic is always to.
Yeah, it's win-win versus win-lose. Like competitions, some competition is win-win, and like that could be good. Like two companies competing in a cell phone market, both produce cell phones. The consumers win. They both win a piece of market share. And, you know, everybody wins. But with games like soccer or whatever, or the state, there's a win-lose where there has to be a loser.
Well, and I think this what One they're talking about is a benefits. Little different. Like, some of the examples they give are say or do outrageous things until the victim lashes out, then accuse them of censorship and oppression. That's pretty common. Accuse the victim of enjoying their victimization and or doing what they do.
I'm having a hard time picturing this. Stop. Who's the victim here? Like, give me something to visualize.
Okay. All right. Let's say for...
Because I'm picturing like a mob of Occupy Wall Street protesters, and they're not really sympathetic to me.
Well, some of them aren't. You know, I know.
I was down there. I was one of them. But I'm saying the group as a whole, you know, as a collective, if we use it that way, it's like they're kind of despicable. Well,
I found an interesting thing happened at the local Occupy Wall Street. This was back when I was just starting to get into my anarchist phase. But, you know, you had a lot of quite a diverse group of people at the Occupy. And, you know, you had your statists, your socialists, your minarchists, your people that just wanted to be left alone, your people that were bored and just were there for attention. But I noticed, like, they had protested, but then they had people that actually camped out in the state park in front of the state house, and they camped out there for weeks until they got thrown out. But
They were on government property, huh?
Right.
Because that's different from Occupy Wall Street, where they were on private property, I thought.
Well, some of them were, some of them weren't.
Isn't Zuccotti Park, isn't that like owned by the banks in the area or something? I don't know. Anyway, yeah, go on with your, what were you saying?
But I've noticed, like, they branched out, you know, like a lot of the people that I ended up talking to that stayed for the long haul weren't of that socialist bent. They were a little more sympathetic to some of the ideals I hold. So, I mean, I found it interesting.
So who am I picturing when you're talking about the powerful majority that's falsely convinced that they're the oppressed ones?
Well, it's the majority is anyone that doesn't agree with the minority's protest. So, like, if let's take, and I don't agree with this at all, but let's take the minimum wage people. You know, that's a big thing right now, right? We need to get the minimum wage raised. Now, there's a few of us that are actually pointing out the fallacy of raising the minimum wage, but most of them are just saying, oh, these people are lazy and stupid, you know, and they're turning average everyday people who don't have an understanding of economics against this group by demeaning them and showing the worst of them. You see what I'm saying? They're
not really. Like, I think I get it. It's sort of like, hey, you're poor and you're protesting, you know, the inequality of the super rich and the super poor, and you probably don't understand economics, so we're going to throw a banker out at you to go hate, right?
Well, like the system that we're talking about, right?
The system, they're not gonna, man.
The system isn't going to come out and start quoting Mises or Rothbard on this argument, right? They don't want the minimum wage raised, but they also don't want people having a clear understanding of economics. So they're going to say that these people that are complaining about not making enough money are just playing the victim card, and they actually enjoy it, and they actually enjoy going out in front of McDonald's or Walmart protesting.
See, I think, so we're both referencing from this article that we are reading from by David Wong at crack.com, and I think we're reading bullet point number four completely opposite. So he says, convince the powerful majority that they're the oppressed ones. And so I think he's saying that the majority of people in the world are powerful because they're the majority. Like, because there's the super rich who are just a small minority, and then there's everybody else, right? And that the few at the top try and convince the mass of people that they're actually oppressed when they would be powerful if they would just shake off their shackles.
Well, that is true
too. That's how I read that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's one way of reading it, I guess. I didn't read it like that, but that would work too.
Because that's how I see it. I mean, people could be powerful. They could. We could have freedom tomorrow.
Right, but we're talking about several different groups, right? I mean, so there's a majority. Like, gun rights is another one. So you've got the gun rights activists and the anti-gun rights activists. They're going to pit both of those groups against each other. And one of, and this kind of leads me into number three. One of the best ways they do this is you focus on the most frivolous complaints and the most unlikable members, right? So let's face it, when it comes to gun rights, you and I could make a really good argument for self-defense. And I hate even saying gun rights, because to me it's the right to self-defense and to choose how you defend yourself, whether it's a gun or a knife or whatever. But we could make a good argument, and it would be hard. It's not very hard to demonize Wayne LaPierre, you know, the head of the NRA. So they'll focus on an unlikable member like that, or they'll focus on the frivolous complaints, like some people say, you know, they don't like the waiting period, and there's a lot of people that think that's reasonable. So they'll focus on that.
I don't know. I think about it like Chris Cantwell was used as an example in a recent popular article of, like, why don't libertarian women like libertarian men, or what's the issue? And the main headline, and I think major topic of the article, was like how unattractive Chris Cantwell is. And so, like, you take one person, set them up as the representative for the entire group, and then disparage that one person, and it disparages the whole group.
Yeah, and you see that, and you
it's
see
like,
that with
not all women's ANCAPs are Chris Cantwell.
Right, and you see that with a lot of like feminist groups. They'll focus on the most nasty, like angry, man-hating, ugly, unattractive, whatever. And they'll paint the whole group like that, when many of them don't even believe those same things that one person is talking about.
Worms. Hey, Chris Cantwell is right here sleeping next to me in studio. How weird is that? I'm going to keep him away from the microphones.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
Meow. Meow.
Meow.
Tie these last two up fairly quickly here.
Yes.
Number two is pit two disadvantaged groups against one another, and then you insist that only one of them can win. I mean, that, I think that's probably the most common. That goes back to what I was saying about the us versus them thing.
That's like Republicans and Democrats.
Right. Or Mac versus Windows, or...
Yeah, but they're not... I mean, who are the disadvantaged groups? Like, what about the middle class and the lower class? You know, right. Like people...
That's a classic example. Like, I mean, those two are pit fighting against each other all the time when they're both being financially oppressed by the same entities.
It is pretty funny. Like, if you can take a step back and see what's happening in that situation where it's like there's a group of political masters who make up maybe 1% of the population, maybe less. Then there's everybody else. And they're like having all of their wealth sucked away by these violent thugs who enforce their laws by fiat.
Parasites.
Yeah, these parasites. And then they put out this lie to the other 99% like, oh, hey, you know, get us in power and then we'll... We'll give you what you want, but that's never the case.
We'll protect you from that other group.
Right.
Like you middle class people, we know you've got it a little rough, but if you start listening to all those poor people, oh my God, it'll be so much worse, and you'll have an even tougher time making ends meet if you follow their example.
Well, that's true.
Which is totally false.
No, that is true.
And I think...
don't listen to poor people.
This kind of leads into number one, too. Insist that any change will ruin the world, right? Because you can't challenge the current
system
it will. The current way.
It will ruin the world for people who want to keep the world the way it is.
Exactly. But, I mean, think about slavery. Think about religious persecution. And I know some of that stuff still happens in the world today. But there were people that challenged that. And the status quo said, you know, who will pick the cotton? Or, you know, it'll be chaos if we change. We may not have a perfect system, but it's the best we've got, and we can't change it now. I mean, think about how much innovation would have been stifled if we would have kept that attitude that change will ruin the world.
Yeah, well, fortunately, the people who make change don't care.
Right, but it's scare tactics too, right? So if you threat, like, I'm a middle class guy. I'm not. I don't know. Sometimes it's hard paying the bills or whatever, but I manage. You know, I don't want for a whole lot. I don't have a whole lot either. But the elite, the secret rulers, you know, the system. They'll say, hey, you know, if you follow this change of alternative currencies and barter and trade and abolishing the state, you'll lose everything you have. You know, it may not be perfect right now, and you may struggle once in a while, but if you follow these crazy people's example, you'll lose everything. You know,
I think that's
a scare tactic.
That's kind of like what happened when Hank Paulson held Congress hostage by saying, you know,
with the bailout.
Yeah, the economy will collapse if you don't, you know, pass this, you know, give us free money law.
Right.
Yeah. So it'll ruin the world.
Yeah, it's the threat of violence and losing your... I mean, that's the whole point. If we go back to the beginning of the article, it's basically to keep the system as it is, you know, maintain the status quo.
Yeah. Yeah, but don't be fooled.
You keep the majority of people fighting amongst themselves, and that small minority at the top can pretty much do whatever they want. So don't be fooled, right?
Yeah, don't participate in slave-on-slave violence. That's why I don't get into arguing matches with people who like disagree with me. A lot of people don't like the ideas of liberty, or they don't like the activism that happens Keene if they confront me. You know, I just want to hear them out and nod and, you know, peacefully coexist. Set that example of like, hey, you can have your different view and that's fine. Just don't take me in it with you.
Just don't impose it on
me. Yeah. Well, I hope we've calmed the hamster in your brain tonight, Chandler.
Totally. I'm nice.
Me too. I'm calm. I feel better. We didn't get to the NSA story and I'm glad for it.
Yeah, who wants to talk about that?
We should mention, Michael sent us a funny article called, I'm a liberal professor and my liberal students terrify me. Maybe he'll get to that.
It's on Vox.com. You should check it out. It's
very funny.
Worms.
And in the remaining 20 seconds, I also want to say there was a kid who got pardoned today in New Jersey. And that's a happy story. I like to hear people not going to jail for things. Me more too. Of that, please. All right, Freedom Fiends. Peace.